Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 217. I'm Rob Wright, Security News Director at TechTarget, and I am here with Senior Security News Writer Alex Kalafi. Alex, welcome.
Thanks, Rob.
Alex, we are back from Black Hat. We've been back for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
I should note that we are recording this on a Thursday morning on August 17th, so it has been almost or more than a week since the show kicked off. We are doing, I guess, a summary, a brain dump, a recap of what stood out at Black Hat USA 2023 for us individually. You and I attended the show together. Well, not together. We barely saw each other.
We saw each other twice for all of 10 minutes each.
Yeah. That's no disrespect to you.
I didn't think it was until now.
would have loved to have hung out. Yeah, it was a busy show. But that's good. That's good. I guess, you know, in terms of work for us, I guess the more work that you have going into a conference and the more stuff you can produce, the better, I guess.
The less time you have to spend on the show floor.
Yeah, the less time you have to spend on the show floor or the press room or eating overpriced food in crowded Vegas restaurants.
Yeah.
So Black Hat, I think it was a pretty good show this year.
I liked it better than last year's show for sure.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to go back and really think about it, but the sessions that I caught, I thought were very good and very informative. And even the ones that I didn't think rose to the level of, well, I need to write something on this, had some information and some takeaways that I thought were very informative and very useful. So I guess that's a mark of a good show these days.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to go first or do you want me to go first with highlights?
Yeah. So we each brought three highlights into this, yes. which was completely coincidental. My first one was sort of a broad Black Hat highlight rather than focusing on a specific security element. But it was that I felt the messaging this year, whether it be in the programming or on the show floor, or just across the board, was leaning more heavily toward being accessible. Whether it is, you know, explaining some concepts out, like the CISA sessions that I went to, they felt very like my dad could understand them type sessions for the most part. I mean, every session has those little jokes that are just for the tech people there, but for the most part, I found everything pretty accessible that I saw. I would actually compare it favorably to RSA, where it's like marketing way up front and then the sessions were a little more on the technical side. But with Black Hat, I actually felt it was kind of the opposite, where there was tons of marketing, but it was not as in your face as it was at RSA. And all the sessions I attended were easier for me as someone who knows a little bit, but not everything, in the same way like a security engineer would. I felt I could fully appreciate and enjoy the show compared to any RSA or Black Hat I had been to before.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, there's been a lot of folks in recent years, I think, that I've talked to who feel like Black Hat is maybe
selling out.
Maybe becoming a little bit more like RSA used to be 10, 15 years ago, where it had a mix of high level technical stuff for the quote unquote hackers and the professionals, and also a little more entry level content or base level content for a more general audience. And then that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's interesting that you note that. I mean, I guess looking back on the stuff that I attended, Some of the stuff was more accessible. So, yeah, good point. Okay.
What was yours? What was your first one?
Well, Alex, you know, just when you thought it was safe to trust modern microprocessor architectures, go back in the water. I think the thing that stood out to me the most amongst the sessions that I attended and the stuff that I was able to, lucky enough to learn about and discussions prior to the show starting, was the downfall attacks
that one kind of snuck up on us, huh?
Yeah. I mean, this was on the agenda and it, you know, portions of it were redacted, and you could kind of assume that what was coming from Google was not going to be great. But the session that Daniel Maghimi, Google researcher who discovered CVE 2022-40982 in Intel processors, recent Intel processors, I guess, of the last 8 years, most of them, I think. Mm-hmm. Just another sort of, if I may summarize quickly, another kind of speculative execution type issue where data is leaking from these processors via something called the gather function, or instruction rather, and it can be abused by a threat actor who gets control of or gets inside a system. They can use that gather function to obtain encryption keys, high level information, sensitive data, etc., from other accounts, other users on the same CPU, using the same CPU. So, in other words, not that big of a deal if you get onto my laptop, because I'm really the only user other than the admin that occasionally logs on to do IT support. Although that could be bad in its own right if somebody was able to get control of that admin account. Where this is really bad is if somebody gets into a Azure account, let's say, on a multi-tenant cloud, and they get access to that account and then use the downfall attack exploit CVE 2022-40982, they can not just get the data for that Azure account that they've compromised, but they can get data from other Azure accounts using that same CPU because it's multi-tenant, and start pulling in data. Not good. And I know some folks have said, oh, you know, another Meltdown, Spectre, hubbub, and, you know, everybody's freaking out and it's not that big of a deal. And it may be true. Maybe there's no real world attacks that exploit this, and that's a good thing. But we've already seen that Intel, their fixes impact performance negatively. And you wonder how many organizations are going to actually apply the mitigations and deploy the microcode up, or accept the microcode updates. And what this could do down the road in the hands of a nation state threat actor. It doesn't seem great. And this is just sort of the first finding. And I don't want to say a new class, but it's a new area. Like, I don't think anybody had looked at this gather function or gather instruction, what it could do for speculative execution on modern microchips. So not great.
Yeah.
Not great. That that paper, that that session, that interview I did with Daniel prior to the event was really interesting. So hopefully it turns out to be nothing, and the critics out there who say this isn't that big of a deal, it's just a moderate or medium severity CVE, hopefully they're right. But it's a little unsettling because I think that this is going to take some potential architectural changes to fully fix. So,
but of all the zero day vulnerability, we're dropping research of this today at the show, between Black Hat and DEF CON, I feel like this one got the most play.
It got a lot of attention, and I think rightfully so. I don't think it's a four-alarm fire panic, like, oh my God. But, I mean, Daniel divulged this. He reported this to Intel, you know, in August, late August of 2022. The CBE is 2022. And they held off for a year. So I think that supports the idea that this is serious and needed to be addressed and took a lot of work to address on Intel's part. And hopefully we don't find out other chip makers are falling victim to the same issue. But so that was my first highlight. What's your second?
My second is same as the RSA theme, generative AI. That was the product talk of the town at Black Hat 2023. That was my sort of show roundup that I wrote on that Wednesday, was all about generative AI, because what surprised me was not that everyone was pushing generative AI. Well, it kind of more surprised me that, like, it had changed, the messaging had changed so little since RSA. Like, it was just front and center. We got generative AI. I think the only change is that more people are saying generative AI and LLM than they were at RSA. They were just saying AI back then. And I think sort of the lower denominator is sort of picked up the terminology and concepts a little better, if that makes sense. But what has also been interesting to me is that it seems like we're kind of getting settled in on what this early wave of Gen AI is sort of capable of. Like, they're doing the breach alerts. They're doing, we can write log reports that are human readable and you can give to executives. They're doing sort of threat intelligence type stuff. The five or six things people have been talking about with generative AI for the last few months, people have sort of figured it out. And one of the things I asked at all my interviews this year is, do you think Gen AI is hitting a bit of a plateau? Like, everyone's sort of releasing their platform, whether it's a platform or it's new functionality on their existing platform. Like, Tenable just launched their AI platform, and it folds into Tenable One rather than being its own separate thing, like which Google kind of did. And I asked everyone I talked to, like, do you think we're sort of plateauing right now? And the overall consensus I got was, yeah, they've kind of figured out Gen AI for now. Everyone's sort of settling into the use cases. But I think it was I have his name right here, Eric Skinner, Trend Micro's vice president of market strategy and corporate development. He told me that he thought it would be a brief plateau, and that we're going to see a second wave of the more unusual use cases and sort of the more interesting sort of ways you can use OpenAI's APIs or whatever proprietary technology they want to use.
Yes. Yeah. Interesting. And that actually transitions to my second highlight, because I too, you know, caught a little bit here and there of the generative AI, LLM craze, and, you know, talked with different folks and saw different sessions that touched on it. Or, I to your point, I feel like there was more tangible, not demonstrations. I still think we need to see live demonstrations of how these chatbots and stuff work for, you know, that are trained on a specific set of security data for a specific tool or platform for certain vendors. But it felt like there was more insight into how these things work. Not, you know, are supposed to work, but how they work in actual real world applications. And so one of the sessions that I caught that I thought was pretty interesting was, there was a phishing email experiment. And it was four researchers. Frederick Heiding was the individual who delivered this session. He was the presenter. but he was part of a team with four other people, one of whom, Bruce Schneier, obvious, very well-known security expert and author. And this quartet basically conducted a phishing experiment at Harvard to see how well large language models could create functional, effective phishing emails. But the more important part of this to me was they tested four LLMs to see how well they did at detecting phishing emails.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't great at outright saying, like, hey, this is a phishing email. Because as Frederick pointed out, you know, during his presentation, the only difference between a phishing email and a marketing email sometimes, a lot of times, is the intention.
Mm-hmm.
But in this experiment, they basically tested, I think, 100-something Harvard students to see how many of them clicked on different variations of emails that were offering like a free Starbucks gift card if they signed up for, I don't even remember what it was. And so they tested it against, tested ChatGPT composed emails. They tested their own sort of composed manual human generated model called, I think it was V Triad, that would produce phishing emails. And the verdict of the experiment was basically that manually built phishing emails are still a little more effective than just, you know, feeding data into ChatGPT without any sort of training data, or, you know, if you're just using general purpose account for ChatGPT, you'll get a workable email, but it won't be as good as a human's. But the LLMs in detection, they were actually pretty good. I think they tested Bard, they tested ChatGPT, and I am failing to remember what the other. Oh, it was ChatLlama, the open source chatbot based on Meta's Llama, and Anthropic's large language model Claude. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Both sound pretty good. Yeah.
And these LLMs were really good at least flagging and sort of saying, oh, that this contains suspicious elements, or this, you know, seems a little odd. They weren't always great at outright saying, like, okay, this is an obvious phishing email. But I think in a couple of cases, they would ask for advice, like the users would ask for advice about what should we do, how should we respond to this email. And I think they said that Claude was gave really good advice to basically say, like, hey, if you think that this is a suspicious offer, then just go to the website or go to the university and check their website or email them to confirm that this offer is legit. Which Frederick said during his presentation, like, that's better advice than I would have given.
Right.
So he sort of, you know, hinted that, hey, we could see applications, specific applications that are trained on specific types of phishing emails that are good for detecting whether or not your organization is getting like fake emails. Like, are you under a phishing attack, or is this a real like ADP link from your organization's HR or whatever? So I thought that was great. Like, we are starting to see potential applications, like real world applications for this stuff that could be pretty useful.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I feel better about, like, you know, maybe I did during RSA when I'm like, yeah, this just seems like a lot of hype. It still might be a lot of hype, but at least now we're getting to the point where, hey, we can see some of how this works. We're getting some insight into the abilities that this stuff can give us. So that was good.
And then the line they're kind of giving people is that this isn't going to replace employees.
Right.
This is going to, this is pretty much just for low severity work that is laborious and having a chat bot would help you work through without there being big consequences if it screws something up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which seems like that's like pretty much what everyone's saying who right. I've asked about this sort of stuff.
Right. Right. All right. Number three, last one.
Number three, and this one's kind of a specific weird one, but I think more attention is being put toward attack surface management and sort of defending yourself before you're breached, right? Like getting there before the attack. That was something from folks I talked to who I'm like, okay, everyone's talking about AI, but what else are people talking about? And someone, one person who like does work on attack surface management, like said that, but then someone who didn't also said that. So I was kind of surprised, but the reasoning I heard and the reasoning that I think kind of makes sense is that endpoint products are getting a lot better. And as endpoint products are getting a lot better, people are starting to look at before the breach occurs, maybe with a little more attention. Mm-hmm. I also think the other possible thing is that everyone's trying to make their own multifunctional platform. No one wants to do just one thing, which maybe has always been the case, but I feel like everyone was introducing new functionality. One of the most surprising ones was Coalition, the cyber insurer, who are trying to build this entire security lifecycle product for those who they underwrite, whatever, who's a customer. And I think that is very interesting as someone who's not traditionally known as a security vendor goes, well, what if we actually do some security vendor-y stuff, which is like the bug crowd playbook. So I found attack surface management and I guess the shift towards more functionality, getting more of the security life cycle, kind of two trends, but they sort of fit in the same part of my mind, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I'll allow that. That's interesting.
What'd you think?
My last one is, I guess, a general observation that's tied to a couple sessions. And actually, I think you touched on this as well with the Trend Micro session story that you did. Cloud security seems like it's becoming a little bit of a problem. And when I mean cloud security, I guess like as a broad term, cloud vulnerabilities, cloud misconfigurations, end user customers and admins understanding of the cloud environment and what their responsibility is and how to secure their environments and not expose their data or expose their instances, or understanding what their obligations are and the maybe lack of clarity or lack of clear cut instructions on how best to configure stuff. So touching on that, really good Wiz session at the show on Wednesday where they discussed how multi-tenant apps in Azure AD are becoming exposed through a very sort of common misconfiguration where the end user customer is not sort of understanding that they need to configure their apps and their permission settings to restrict just their organization or just their employees to access those apps. So Wiz basically doing some research, they found that if you're an Azure account holder, you can log in or you can access sometimes Azure AD apps that are multi-tenant apps. So like as long as you're part of the same tenant, an Azure account, you can just log into these multi-tenant apps, and it's on the customer to basically say, no, I only want my organization to access this multi-tenant app, which is not clear from the settings, although Microsoft's made some changes to that, so good for them. But you know, you had touched on some Azure issues. I think it was the machine learning part of Azure with the Trend Micro Session. This isn't to beat up on Microsoft and Azure. There's been tons of this going on for a while, but it feels like it's getting to the point now where we don't have a lot of visibility in cloud vulnerabilities. We don't get cloud CVEs because they usually don't require end user interaction, or doesn't require customers to apply patches or anything. It just provider flips a switch and everything's back to normal, which is great, but not great because you don't know how many times that's happened. It's not documented how many repeated blunders or misconfigurations or cloud flaws an organization has had in the past like 5 years or whatever. Whereas you can easily see that with the CVE catalog. So the other part of this is just that the misconfigurations and the settings and just the understanding of how cloud environments work, it just seems like it's getting increasingly complex, and not in a direct way. It feels like the cloud providers keep adding stuff that seemingly makes stuff simple, makes it easy for you to spin up a cloud instance, a cloud app, whatever. And in doing so, makes it really easy to also screw up and not understand what you're doing. And hold on, do you really want to be putting that data in that instance or that online database or that web app, et cetera, et cetera. And as one person I spoke to pointed out to me, it's really hard back in the on-premise days to expose your internal network or an internal server or internal app. It's really easy to do it now. And it's really difficult to figure out sometimes where you went wrong and why that data is public. Talking to a lot of people and obviously going through some sessions, it feels like the threat actors are really cluing in on this. They know that this is a great place to observe and to just sit back and stalk and wait for a misconfiguration. Look up, for exposed instances on Shodan or whatever, to tinker around with permissions, authorizations, et cetera, for different cloud platforms, cloud apps, what have you, and see what you can get, because this happens a lot. So little concerning, Alex.
Do you think there's going to be a security reckoning for cloud in the next few years where it's like, I know why there aren't CVEs for this, but some issues there.
Yeah, it's not just CVEs, and that's where it gets complicated. It's not just CVEs. I think it's the reckoning probably already should have happened, but big picture, I think that we're going down a road where there's been so many layers and features and new offerings and additions and stuff that it's hard to keep up with all this and really understand what you're doing and what your obligation is, and not understanding how easy it is to screw stuff up and expose it or open it up to attack or what have you. So, I mean, maybe next year there is a sort of public reckoning with this, but I don't know. It's concerning. And I it feels like a lot of the security vendors are taking note of this and just kind of maybe internally wondering like, okay, how do we fix this? Cause it feels like it's new feature after new feature after new feature. And
yep.
Who knows? But all in all, I would say really good show.
Mm-hmm.
Good meetings, good interviews, good speakers. I just didn't really sleep much, and I guess that's my cross to bear. But I think a successful Black Hat 2023 for us overall between you and I. So,
mm-hmm.
Well, Alex, I appreciate you taking time out to chat with me about Black Hat 2023 and share your highlights. Thank you very much.
Anytime.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of the Risk and Repeat podcast and Tech Target Security. I'm Rob Wright, and we will see you next time.